once again, listener. I'm Hugh Thomas, Deputy Editor at The Lancet Gastroenterology and Hepatology, and I'm delighted to welcome you to the In Conversation With podcast. Our feature paper in this episode covers work to validate the new steatotic liver disease nomenclature, which caused quite a splash in 2023 in a Danish cohort of patients with a history of excessive alcohol intake. This paper appears in our March 2024 issue. Alongside this study, other top-draw research reported in this issue includes a global analysis providing for the first time a comprehensive assessment of the lifetime risk of developing or dying from GI cancers. We have a phase 3 trial of linaclotide for children with functional constipation, and we have the results of the NORPACT 1 phase 2 trial of neoadjuvant FOLFIRINOX versus upfront surgery for patients with resectable pancreatic head cancer. In the review section, we have a state-of-the-art on acute severe ulcerative colitis management, and as featured on the cover so wonderfully, we also have a review exploring the challenges of diagnosing and treating inflammatory bowel disease in Latin America. For all of this content, our comment and correspondence sections, and of course the usual news and in-focus features, head online now to lancet.com. Now, for the featured article, my guest today is Dr. Mads Israelsen, the first author on the paper. Dr. Israelsen is affiliated with Odense University Hospital and the University of Southern Denmark, and his research interests lie in clinical hepatology, with a focus on the management of alcohol-related liver disease, metabolic risk factors, and the gut microbiome. Dr. Israelsen, wonderful that you could join us today on the podcast. Thank you very much for coming in to discuss the paper.
Thank you very much for the invitation, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. So I think many of our listeners will know about the process around discussing and exploring the nomenclature and the definitions for fatty liver disease, which obviously includes non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, that ultimately that then produced the new steatotic liver disease nomenclature that was published last year. We'll obviously get onto what that is in a second, but firstly, why was this nomenclature process undertaken in the first place?
So that is a very good question, and I had a feeling that you'd ask in that direction. And since I wasn't involved in the process myself, I called Professor Mario Rinella. So Professor Rinella is a co-author of the study we're going to discuss today, and has been a part of leading the process of the new nomenclature. So when I asked her why the process was initiated, she laughed at me, saying that there wasn't a short answer to this. And so we talked for over half an hour. But let me boil it down. So the International Liver Organization gathered a large panel of experts and patient advocates. The panel concluded that they wanted to find a non-stigmatizing name for what had previously been called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. In other words, to eliminate the terms alcoholic and fatty. Secondly, they wanted it to be an affirmative diagnosis, meaning the diagnosis should be based on specific positive criteria related to cardiometabolic risk factors characterizing the disease. And thirdly, there was a desire to include alcohol consumption in an overall disease definition in a way that makes the definition reflect clinical reality. Because in many cases, steatotic liver disease can be placed in a dynamic spectrum between cardiometabolic risk factors and increasing levels of alcohol intake.
So a lot of goals then for a nomenclature process, obviously going to be extremely complex. What was the result of the process? What were these, you mentioned these disease subclasses and this kind of interaction with alcohol. What was the ultimate result of what came out of that process?
So the concrete result is a paper defining a group of diseases characterized by abnormal lipid accumulation called hepatic steatosis. The overarching term steatotic liver disease encompasses all causes of hepatic steatosis. Within this overarching term SLD, there are several subclasses, of which the three most common are MASLD, metabolic dysfunction-associated steatotic liver disease, formerly NAFLD, and then alcohol-related liver disease. And then there is this new overlapping category of metabolic and alcohol-related liver disease, abbreviated as MET-ALD. These are the three groups we have focused on in this study. In other words, the diagnosis of steatotic liver disease is made through histology and imaging that shows hepatic steatosis. Subclasses then depends on the presence of cardiometabolic risk factors and average alcohol intake. So alcohol intake divides into three subclasses. MASLD, is defined by daily alcohol consumption of less than, for women, 20 gram, and for men, 30 gram. MedALD is defined as daily alcohol consumption for women between 20 and 50 gram, and for men, 30 to 60 gram. Exceeding these limits qualifies as ALD, defined by a daily alcohol consumption for women of 50 gram or more, and for men, 60 gram or more.
We have these three disease subclasses. You have MASLD on one end, and you have ALD on the other, and then this MetALD sitting in the middle. What were the kind of the key unanswered questions around this new MetALD subclass that came out of the consensus process?
Yeah, well, that probably depends on who you ask. But I can start by mentioning the questions that came to us shortly after the introduction of the new nomenclature. So let's go back to last summer. It actually began at the EASL Summer School for Young Hepatologists focusing on alcohol-related liver disease. Here, I had a session about the overlap between NAFLD and ALD. It had been planned for a long time, but the school took place just 1 week after the new nomenclature was published. And I wondered what it would look like if we applied the criteria of the new nomenclature to our cohort of patients with a history of excessive alcohol use. So preparing for this session, I classified the patients according to the criteria, and it turned out to be some very interesting results and an even more interesting discussion we had during this session at the EASL school. And after the session, Alexander Krau came over to me enthusiastically and said, we must immediately investigate whether these different subclasses have prognostic implications. And so the project was underway.
And so that then ties in really nicely with the paper that we're going to be discussing today, your new study. What were the key design features? So where did it kind of come from? What patients were you including? And then, you know, all the technical aspects. So sort of how was the liver disease and the alcohol intake evaluated, and what outcomes were you looking at? Sorry, that's a lot of questions.
Yeah, but I can answer them. So 10 years ago, the cohort was initiated by my colleagues, Maya Chile and Alexander Krau. The ambition was to study alcohol-related liver disease among individuals with a history of excessive alcohol use, but who were unaware if they had liver disease, thus without a history of hepatic decompensation. So in this study, liver disease severity was assessed by histology and transient elastography. The cardiometabolic risk factors were assessed on the same day, and then alcohol intake was evaluated through standardized questions, including quantification of the alcohol intake over the last 3 months, which we here used for the subclassification of steatotic liver disease. And then the outcome were recorded manually through the medical records and patient registers.
So in terms of the people you were including in this study, I think over 5 years, you recruited 446 individuals with a recurrent or a prior excessive alcohol intake. And you had about a median of 70 months of follow-up for those patients. What did these patients look like, you know, thinking about their demographic and their clinical characteristics?
Yeah, so at first sight, most of the patients appeared well, so none of them had decompensated cirrhosis or alcohol-related hepatitis, which we are used to see in the clinic. But to give some data, the mean age was 55 years, 25% women and 75% men. Median liver stiffness was 6.5 kilopascal and 13% presented with cirrhosis. Interestingly, only 2% had no cardiometabolic risk factors. And regarding the self-reported alcohol consumption, the median daily intake was 12 gram in the last 3 months prior to the inclusion, and almost half reported being abstinent in the week leading up to inclusion. Then, when we applied the criteria for the new nomenclature, it turned out that out of these 446 patients, nearly 3/4 met the criteria for steatotic liver disease. Thus, a good quarter of patients did not fulfill the criteria for steatotic liver disease, meaning they had no hepatic steatosis and no significant fibrosis. Then, for the subclassification, we stratified based on this self-reported alcohol intake over the last 3 months. Here, about half reported a low alcohol intake met the MASLD criteria. Nearly a quarter had excessive alcohol intake matching the MetALD criteria, and a good quarter had excessive alcohol intake matching the ALD criteria.
And how did the presence of SLD or one of those subclasses of SLD affect what's happening in terms of clinical outcomes? So the risk of hepatic decompensation or death over those median 70 months of follow-up that you were looking at these people?
So patients with steatotic liver disease had a significantly worse prognosis than those without steatotic liver disease, both in terms of hepatic decompensation and overall mortality. This was more or less what we had expected finding. However, what was truly exciting was to discover that the subclasses have prognostic significance. So to clarify, the Cox regression analysis revealed that upon examining the three subclasses of SLD, the risk of hepatic decompensation increased in a stepwise manner from MASLD through MedALD to ALD, with a hazard ratios around 5, 8, and 10 compared to patients without steatotic liver disease. The same trend was observed for overall mortality, where there was an increase in a stepwise manner from MASLD through MedALD to ALD, with hazard ratios around 2.3, 2.9, and 3.6 compared to patients without steatotic liver disease. So the subclasses actually hold clinical significance.
Coming off of that, showing that the subclasses really have a clinical prognostic value in this study, what do you think are the key kind of take-home findings for other people reading your study?
So I think there are three key findings that can be summarized into one. The framework of the new nomenclature proves to be applicable and carries prognostic implications. Two, alcohol consumption significantly determines the prognosis across the subclasses of steatotic liver disease. And three, many patients present with multiple cardiometabolic risk factors, and I think we must adopt a holistic approach in treating patients with steatotic liver disease. Regardless of the subclass, we must address both cardiometabolic risk factors, alcohol intake, and alcohol use disorder.
And so in terms of unanswered questions that this work raises, you know, obviously the nomenclature itself was raising these questions around MET-ALD, and you've addressed some of them here. Where else do you see the areas of uncertainty coming out of this data?
So I think that many listeners might be wondering why we chose a three-month period to assess patients' alcohol consumption. Is this accurate, or should it be a longer period? How long can we expect an individual to recall and provide an accurately qualified estimate? We don't know yet. The new nomenclature's framework does not define any specific period. Therefore, for future research, it's extremely important to answer this question, because we need to establish clear criteria for incorporating historical alcohol intake into the criteria of the new nomenclature. And then additionally, how should we quantify alcohol use? In our study, the quantification was based on self-reported consumption, which is considered pretty imprecise. Yet, it's what we all use in the clinical practice, and until we have actual biomarkers, I believe that this will remain a challenge.
And then finally, and I think maybe this is going a little bit more broader than your study at the moment, but in terms of the implications that you see from the nomenclature process and the creation of this MET-ALD subclass, how do you think that will affect management of patients in the clinic? And then also, you know, a lot of this was also around how clinical trials can be improved, looking at treatments for areas around MASLD and MET-ALD and ALD. What implications do you think are going to be coming out for there as well?
Yeah, well, let's start with the clinical practice. So I think this is a significant step forward. We now have a nomenclature that reflects clinical practice. The introduction of MedALD subclass will be helpful because this condition is carried by a large group of patients with steatotic liver disease, and there wasn't a name for them before. In terms of clinical practice, it's my expectation that the new nomenclature will foster an increased focus on steatotic liver disease as a dynamic spectrum, and hopefully this will lead to a holistic approach in managing patients with steatotic liver disease, regardless of the subclass. And then for the clinical trials, I think that having now some specific criteria is very important, because then we can conduct clinical trials for patients within each subclass, and this is actually already underway. I know that several major pharma companies are now launching phase 2 trials for patients with MED-ALD and ALD. And this is very encouraging because finding treatments for patients with MED-ALD and ALD will, in my opinion, be the biggest step in hepatology since the discovery of the cure for hepatitis C.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think it surely promises to be a bit of a revolutionary period. As you say, you know, perhaps MET-ALD and the redefinition of MET-ALD will open the door almost into kind of treatments for ALD itself as well. So fantastic. Dr. Zwelsen, wonderful. Thank you very much again for joining us on the podcast and sharing all of those really interesting thoughts about your paper.
Thank you.
So you can read the paper on the validation of the steatotic liver disease nomenclature, along with all of the other content from our March 2024 issue, online now at lancet.com. Thank you once again to Dr. Zwelsen, and thank you for listening to this episode of the Lancet Gastroenterology and Hepatology podcast, In Conversation With. And remember, you can subscribe to In Conversation With wherever you usually get your podcasts.